Thank you, thank you. What a pleasure to be here. I've only attended one time, and I have always wanted to come back. Didn't know I'd come back as a speaker. But the one time I came was when Pat spoke. So it's certainly a pleasure. I know that many of you are on the same journey that Pat and I have been on for probably over 40 years. And Pat was actually my spiritual mentor when I first met her through a project in the schools with arts, and she opened my eyes and my heart to this spiritual journey that I've continued to this day and will continue for the rest of my life. But today, it's my pleasure to be able to share with you some of the connections that I've had with the natural world. Most of my life has been spent in this harmony with the world, and it was such a pleasure to read that chapter. I don't know that I can do it service in terms of the beauty of her words. So you will have to bear with me. I had vowed that I wouldn't give any more public talks. I had a stroke a couple of years ago, and I thought, those days are over. I'm not so articulate anymore. And then I read the chapter, and I went, oh, wow. I have to live up to this. So you will bear with me, and also my limited technology. I'm going to share with you some of the images of the work that I've done, and then at the end, Kimberly's work, I also will share with you. And I have a few snippets of video that I would like to share with you as well. This topic is really not about words. It's about nonverbal communication. And how do you talk about nonverbal communication with words? So I brought with me a few snippets of just pieces of working with the horses. So I will have to go back and forth, and I'm not sure that I will be very adept with this, with pulling up YouTube videos, etc. But I will try and do my best. So anyway, this beautiful essay on the horses, just the fact that they have rewilded back into their natural community is just a stunning, stunning picture of this dynamic relationship that we have with all creatures and how this living web is woven into this consciousness of each of these creatures and how each has its own unique place in the greater connection with the living earth. So I'm going to try to pull out some of the themes that she talked about in this beautiful chapter and then weave them into my own work. It's so easy task with this beautiful essay before me. The first theme that I could pull out was that of the patterns of these living relationships. They're always in motion. It's not a static relationship, but it's a movement. And my work with the horses is very much that, and I will try to show that as we go through this. These creatures are mutually responsive to one another. They're interdependent, and they form a coherent whole with the wisdom of the earth. Also, there's a wordless exchange that takes place among this natural community. They live in these fluid patterns, and the relationships are always changing depending upon the circumstances. It may be hunger, it may be weather, it may be any number of factors in the environment that change that dynamic relationship. And then one thing that I'd really like to emphasize, and it's so beautifully stated in this chapter, is that image of the relationship and the opposition of the predator-prey relationship. And she talks so beautifully about that with the wolves coming up with the horses, but somehow the horses know that the wolves are not there as a threat, but they're part of that interdependence at that moment in time. And actually, with the work that I do, it's a really, really important relationship. Because how many of you know that we as human beings are, what, predators? We are meat eaters, carnivores, predators. Now think about the horses. What are they? They're prey animals. They are dependent on their senses, their exquisite awareness of their environment in order to survive and to really, you know, be safe from the predators. So when we enter into a relationship with the horses, we are the predators, they are the prey. We have to establish this harmony amongst them, or else they're not going to trust us. and we can't be in that relationship. So a big part of the work that I do is very much establishing that predator-prey interdependence and balance. And finally, I think it's really important to understand how these relationships allow us as human beings with a consciousness to step into a larger self beyond our ego. And I think I keep moving my slides here, but I just got this. This is really one of the themes that I pulled out of this chapter, and that's my little dog and miniature horse. But this the rising consciousness that occurs in this relationship, it's bigger than either one of the participants in the relationship. And again, everything comes down to love. It's that relationship, which is that divine dance of love. And these relationships allow us to step beyond this larger self, this ego, and a little bit closer. Thank you, Tom, for reminding me. I tend to wander. Okay? Can you hear me now? Okay. But they allow us to step beyond our ego, our small self, and move from a notion of separation into wonder and awe and unity beyond the flow of time and space. So, coordinate all this paperwork. And I just thought that would kind of remind us of that relationship. And now, my favorite quote, probably in the whole world, I read this at my mother's funeral. And I love this. It's a Rumi quote. Out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there's a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in the grass, the world is too full to talk about ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. And that's where the horses meet us. So I'm hoping that I can impart to you that place beyond what we see, what we perceive in our senses. There is that coherent whole, that space beyond, where we move into a different consciousness. So, I think we all have what I call a soul blueprint. And mine, I was very fortunate to discover as a child. I as Pat mentioned, I spent a year in bed with a couple of they got fatal illnesses. Obviously, they were wrong. But I had time as a child to really go inward and to experience a lot of very mystical kind of experiences. And I knew that I was always supposed to be a healer of the marginalized, the traumatized, and the disabled. And I knew that was my calling. And yet somehow it was to be intertwined with this deep connection with the soul of the earth and its creatures. And I've always been drawn to the horse. I love dogs and all other animals, but somehow that relationship with the horse, and I think it's probably embedded in our DNA in terms of how we relate to this earth. And I believe that there's something mystical about that horse-human relationship that goes back thousands of years. I mean, we domesticated these animals. They did rewild back here in this country, which is so beautiful to know that we have that that history and that connection and that legacy. But for thousands of years, they have been our companions, our workhorses, our friends. For me, they're just part of my journey on this earth. And I hope I can impart some of this, my love of this work with you. And I call it soul work. And as I move forward in my own spiritual development, I realize that my connection with these magnificent animals really is part of my whole belief, and my Christian beliefs really have framed much of this in terms of what I call a creation-based spirituality. And I'm not sure where all of you are, but I suspect we all have kind of similar views here, perhaps. And I've been doing a lot of work with looking at the incarnation of the earth and the creatures on it as part of the body of Christ. And so I feel like these creatures are part of that incarnation. And certainly in the tradition of the mystics, and I'm particularly fond of St. Francis. I'm not a Catholic, but I'm learning a lot. I've been in the Living School with Richard Rohr, and I just got back. Most of you perhaps know who Richard Rohr is. And I just got back just a few days ago from Albuquerque, and I spent an intensive week with him. There were 30 of us there, and it was wonderful. And we talked about incarnation. And so it was very much along the lines of what I would like to share with you. And as Pat mentioned, you know, I sort of stepped away from this part of my life, and I stepped away from this part of my life to become educated, and I probably was excessively educated. I forgot to mention I have two postdoctorates too. I just keep going on and on and on, and I think, what is that I need? And I finally, with all my own self-psychotherapy, decided I'm trying to carry on. My father couldn't finish college due to the war, and I think I just sort of did this and I went a little bit beyond. But what happened was I really forgot to see. I forgot to see what was right in front of me. I forgot to see the world around me, and I moved to the city, and I just forgot. And I have to say, meeting this lady did help me open my eyes in many ways. And moving to Santa Barbara, which, you know, is a beloved place for me, the first time I ever came here, I said, this is home. And I came from Chicago, and this was home. And it has been for 40 years. And so for the past 40 years, I really rediscovered my original self, finding that reconnection, that grounding, that healing, that spiritual awakening with my relationship with nature, especially with the animals that I love. So I'm going to ask you to indulge me a little bit. As I said, it's very difficult to talk with words about things that are so close to our hearts and really are beyond words, that space that Rumi talked about, beyond a notion of right, wrong, left, right, doing, not doing, a world that can't be expressed in words. So I'm going to share with you a little bit of my own experience and ask you just to kind of join me. I find that some days we all have problems, and mine are no more, no less perhaps than many of yours. But someday my problems seem to hang very heavy on my shoulders and my heart. And I do have a very dedicated and active practice of meditation. And particularly, I've gone through much training with Buddhist-type meditation, etc., Zen, Vipassana, Shamatha. But my always come to form of meditation is centering prayer. And I find that very often that's not even enough. Some mornings I still come away and I feel discombobulated and a little bit out of sorts. And so on those days, I'm really grateful for what I call my embodied form of prayer and contemplation. And I'm going to invite you to share in that for just a moment. As I have found, and this happened, actually this morning I didn't because I had to leave early, but every other morning for 40 years, this has been my practice. So I'm going to invite you to close your eyes if you would like, or you can just look at this beautiful image here. But I want you to just go with me on a little journey into my experience in my morning meditation. Stepping out of my back door in the early morning light, I notice a touch of frost sitting on the steps and the grass as I feel a shiver of chill in the air. Breathing in the cool, fresh air, I notice a deepening of presence and a slowing of my breath as the white clouds of the foggy breath slowly move out of my lips. It's as if I've come home to myself once again. I begin to feel myself falling into alignment with the sensations of the natural world. Every cell in my body is coming alive. I hear the birds brightly chirping from the trees surrounding me. The earthy smells of the rich dirt and the fresh manure. the sweet smell of the hay and the distinctive recognition of the scent of each horse that I'm here to feed and care for. Proceeding carefully down the slippery steps to the barn to begin my morning chores, a light breeze caresses my face and blows through my hair. And on this rare day in California, I turn my face upwards to the splashes of misty rain, and I feel an overpowering sense of gratitude and replenishment. Stopping momentarily and closing my eyes, I listen deeply to the familiar sounds of the horses munching their hay, sighing, releasing their breath in contentment. My favorite sound in the world. Each distinctive footfall of their hooves calls me deeper into the sensation of this sacred connection with these magnificent creatures. Quite often, I find myself embracing them around the neck and the withers, feeling the sensations of my breath, and moving my awareness even deeper to the heartbeat and breath of each horse, which soon synchronizes with my own. And I have an unshakable knowing that we are one with each other and the whole of creation. In this sacred moment, a new state of being has been created. And thus begins another beautiful day. Thank you. And now I just want to show you a couple of images from my morning excursion. This is my beautiful horse, Exarca, an Andalusian, who unfortunately has Lyme disease, but that doesn't stop us from playing together. And my little dear sweet thing, Pippa. And I'll show you another one later. So this deep presence with the animals that I love so dearly is a daily gift that allows me to go beyond the limitations of ordinary thinking and opens a wider perception of my heart, and it allows an awakening of my soul. Finding this inner relationship with animals opens the space for a deeper level of awareness. And it's too often dormant in our lives. We just kind of go around our dualistic everyday activities, really not focused on that deeper place of being. And we tend to analyze and judge. And, you know, most of our lives are spent in this dualistic stance. And so what I find through this, many things, but for me particularly, this mystical connection with the horse, that there's no separation between the earth and the cosmos, and the spiritual life of each human heart. So to be present to these animals allows us to open up and to live in balance and harmony of the earth. And once we clear this web of separation, of the illusion of separateness, then we see that everything is sacred and interconnected. And I believe that in this connection, in this interspecies connection particularly, that the dynamic flow of all creation is seen and felt, and this conscious awareness, we harness the energy of love. And I find that myself, that I feel like I'm in a divine relationship each morning in my barn meditation. So, how do we translate this deep awareness and deep connection and contemplation into action? And I'm learning through this living school experience that contemplation is certainly wonderful and necessary, but we must have action. We are at a very fragile time on our planet, and we must have action. So each of us in our own small way can make a difference. And perhaps what I'm going to share with you today is my small way of making a difference. And one of my favorite quotes is Rilke's, "The only journey is the journey within." And that's where we begin to draw upon our inner resources to move outward into the world. So, as I said, my path in this world is healing. And I do believe that healing is ultimately a realignment of relationships. And partnering with my horses has been one way of enhancing this process of healing not only myself, but with my patients. And I've been a psychologist for many, many years, and I deal with all types of folks that have every kind of condition you can imagine, but in particular, I deal with folks that have neurological problems as well. So I find a lot of folks with trauma, and I work a lot with veterans and folks that have violence, domestic abuse, etc. And this work has allowed me to become aware of allowing me to move into the experience of non-dual awareness. The natural outcome is trust, communion, and understanding one's true self and place in the world. We also use metaphor to allow us to find a wider awareness and knowing. And implicit in all of this work is mindfulness, mindful awareness. And that merely is a doorway into the present and presence. So from this stance of being in the world and present, we can find peace and reconnection with our inner self. And out of that flows the love, the divine presence, which is simply love. So I'd like to share with you, and I'll just show this picture. The back and forth of the YouTube. But I want to show you a very small clip. Thank you, Tom. I'm so glad he's there to keep me on track and keep me honest. So I'm going to share with you just a little clip to show you sort of that beauty of these creatures.
Projection of our dreams about ourselves, strong, powerful, beautiful, to give us an escape from our mundane existence. You're drawn to the horse.
Okay. So, just a little taste of what it's like to be in that relationship. And I'd like to just take a few moments to kind of tie this into some of the, what I think are some of the theological, spiritual underpinnings of this relationship. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I think this created body of if you want to call it incarnation, and all creation is really the ground upon which love can flourish. And as I said, my focus has been on this interspecies connection with horses for healing. And as I continue this work and I become more and more, I think, aware and on this path of what I call my own spiritual and conscious evolution, I've been gifted with many teachers along the way. And I think you know many of them, perhaps. Jim Finley. Pardon? I know, and he's one of my teachers in the Living School. And he's been a real gift in terms of his non-dual consciousness and really the work of Thomas Merton. And Cynthia Bourgeot is Pat mentioned. And we've been most recently studying Teilhard. So I'm excited to know that you're going to be studying David Rico's book as well. Of course, Richard Rohr certainly has been an inspiration in terms of looking at this larger perspective of what this incarnation means and how we move into this non-dual consciousness. I've been reading from the mystics, St. Bonaventure. That was a new whole study for me, but the notion that matter matters and God is present in all of creation, and of course, St. Francis' work as well. And here's just a little quote from Teilhard. And there's nothing profane here below for those who know how to see. And the work that I'm trying to talk to you about today is really learning how to see with new eyes, with new perception. And if we keep those old eyes of this duality of the world, we can't see beyond that. We can't find that space, that feel beyond that Rumi talks about. So we do need those new eyes of perception. And that's what I believe the horses have given to me, at least, and to my patients. So one of the things that we find with these horses is pure presence. They allow us just to be in that space. And I'm going to show you a number of slides here. These are clients of mine. I'm not betraying any kind of confidentiality here because they've all given permission. And this person in particular, I have several of her. She's actually another psychologist that's doing the work for herself and for her own clients. So don't fear. I'm certainly legal here. So why do we use horses? Well, number one, they're social animals, and they live in a herd. They live in relationship, as we do. And they have their own defined roles. They also, their large size is very imposing. So when I work with folks, you know, it's a little bit intimidating. I work with boys that are in gangs. I work at the Los Prietos Boys Camp. We bring these boys out, and they are, you know, affiliated with gangs, and we put them in the arena with horses. All of a sudden, they are a little bit backed off and some of their defenses fall away. And it's amazing to see some of the transformation that happens. The horses also are empowering. They're very sensitive to nonverbal cues because they have to stay alive in the world because they're prey animals. They require respect and trust. And as I said, they're prey animals, so they will run when they're threatened. They don't tend to fight generally. So we have to be in that kind of relationship. So they find comfort in their herds. When under stress, we find comfort with our people. They're masters of relationships. So we have so much to learn from them in terms of relationships. They're adaptive to changes. They're dynamic in their relationships in terms of social structures. So are we. They show consistency among how they feel and act, so there's a congruence with their behavior, and that's one of the things that they teach us. They also have distinct personalities and moods. These are just some fun little slides I pulled up. And they also like to have fun. And this is one of my veterans that had some wonderful changes happen. They provide direct feedback, and they act as mirrors to our behavior. So they require authenticity in relationships. One of the things that we work on a great deal in this therapy with the horses and the relationship is the moving into a non-dual awareness. And I just pull this up kind of as fun to show you how we need to take our perception and broaden our perception, see things from different perspectives, and not rush to judgment and have a broader awareness before we can move beyond our dualistic nature. Anybody know what that is? What do you see there? What do you see? A frog and a horse. Do you all see the frog? And do you all see the horse? Okay, here's another one. These are kind of fun. But this is just, you know, changing our perception, changing our operating system is Cynthia Bourgeau talks about in order to see things differently. And of course, what do you see there? A face and... Yeah, and a woman on a walk. Yeah, yeah. So horses offer a doorway into this state of non-thinking with words. And we have to recognize that words by nature are dualistic. So when we talk about non-dualism, we're using words which separate and describe and label, and it's really difficult to talk about it. So the experience is so important, and in therapy, traditional psychotherapy is what? We talk. So to go into that space of being with the horses, we don't talk very much. We set up a situation, and the therapist I work with a partner, we step back and allow the horses to do their work without words. Afterwards, we'll come back and do some processing with words. But it's non-thinking. It's going beneath the thinking. that we engage in order to reach a more contemplative and broader perspective. So there are many ways to enter into this, and I find that communing with the natural world certainly is an important way that we can move into that non-dual awareness. And of course, the spirit of the horse allows us to do that. And now another thing that we learn is trust. And our interspecies interactions allow us to have this. And I mentioned that predator-prey, and this is one of my veterans, who had severe PTSD, and he just found this great peace and trust with the horse. I love that picture. And this is just reminding us of that chapter in the book with the wolves. Now, those are buffalo, not horses, but it's the same idea that there is that dynamic relationship and balance. And because the prey-predator relationship is constantly in a dynamic flow and state, we have to tap into that as we work with our horses. And we have to allow that dominance that we have over them to drop so that we can become part of their herd. And I have just some extraordinary pictures here, I'll show you in just a second, of how one will drop into that and tap into that larger field of coherent energy between the species so we have understanding and balance of nature that occurs. And this was after a very extraordinarily meaningful, emotional session with a client who was having severe PTSD. And look what happened with that trust between the horse. And another one. The same thing. Over and over and over again. We find this relationship just drops in. We don't orchestrate this. It just happens. And many of these people have never been near a horse in their life. And again. So this mindful awareness begins, and we move into this coherent resonance that allows these hearts to establish connection. And another thing that is really important in this work is finding a mirror. The mirror becomes a reflection of the true self. And I love this quote by Thomas Merton. The beginning of love is to let those we love be perfectly themselves and not to twist them into fit our own image. Otherwise, we love only the reflection of ourselves in them. And the work with the horses allows us to find that authentic image of ourselves. They don't allow any, incongruity. I mean, they see us as we are. And they will react to us as we present ourselves. So it's a wonderful way for us to be able to see that mirror of, oh, I'm really not acting in authenticity. I'm incongruent in my actions. I'm a false self. So it really allows one to move into that true self. So that congruity in behavior, it allows for the use of subtle cues for trust and survival, which the horses need. And they can sense when the person is out of sync. They also allow us, as mirrors of our dysfunctional thoughts, the incongruence of body-mind awareness, and also mindfulness of being hypersensitive and fearful. And I find we have something called a peace chair that we use. And after we've had a session, very often we will ask the client to move into a space of being mindful and contemplative and sit on the peace chair. And invariably, I don't know how this happens, invariably the horses will take that stance. Sometimes they'll actually put their heads on the person's shoulder or lap and just be there in connection. And I have a partner I work with, we just say, you can't make this up. It happened over and over and over. And again, our friend again. So the exercises help the client to represent a cycle of abuse of power, fear, of response to helplessness, hopelessness. And this reaction, this relationship with the horse restores this internal balance and empowerment. And so the healing is much deeper than just talk therapy. So what I'm going to try to do here now, and I'm looking at time, how much time do we have until the break? Okay, so I will just use a little clip because this is a longer clip. It's one of my clips that was taken at a session that I held. I do retreats on mindfulness and I work with all types of folks, but we actually do all-day, half-day retreats. We even build a labyrinth in the arena, but working with the horses. And so just a little taste, and so I'll just pull up a couple of minutes of it.